You're listening to Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. More than 66,000 people now live on the streets of LA County. That's a near 13% rise year over year. And the numbers are up for the fifth time in 6 years. It is a crisis for sure that demands attention and resources, especially during the pandemic, and one that's gotten judicial attention as well.
Citing the ongoing threat of COVID-19, the judge's preliminary order says any homeless individual living near underpasses and overpasses and near freeway entrances and exits must be moved humanely to safer living conditions.
That was an order by Judge David O. Carter about a month ago, which turned up the pressure for city and county officials to get people off the streets. Well, now the city and county have reached an agreement to move thousands of people into shelters from those specific places. In a moment, you're going to hear from the person who leads LA's Homeless Services Authority. But first, KCRW's Anna Scott starts off the show to give us a quick explainer on that deal between Judge Carter and the city and county of LA. Anna, welcome.
Hey, Steve.
All right. So just talk about what this agreement is. What is the city and the county agreeing to do?
Well, over about the next year and a half, they've agreed to create around 6,000 new beds to move people off the streets and indoors. And if you follow this issue, you know that by city and county standards, 6,000 beds in a year and a half is a lot. That's quick for them. So we're talking about shelters, safe parking lots, potentially campsites with bathroom access, just various, this could take various forms in terms of getting people inside. And of course, permanent housing is also, will be part of the mix. And they will prioritize people who are living within 500 feet of freeways, and also people who are particularly vulnerable to COVID-19. So people over 65, people with certain pre-existing health conditions. And these facilities, these beds will be for people within LA city limits. Specifically, the county's going to help pay for it. That's why this was a negotiated deal.
Let's take a step back, Anna. This agreement came about because of a lawsuit. Tell us about the lawsuit, and does this agreement then end this lawsuit?
Yeah, so you're right about that. This came from a lawsuit, and this is just one early development in what is an ongoing case. So it started a few months ago. A group called the LA Alliance for Human Rights sued the city and county, accusing them of allowing inhumane conditions to persist at homeless encampments. This group is led by a coalition of downtown business owners. So I just think it's important to note that the plaintiffs are not actually unhoused people in the case. Since then, a couple of groups that do work with people experiencing homelessness have intervened. So they're also parties in this lawsuit. But initially, so the groups all convened, they were looking for some relatively quick ways to get people inside safely, just some low-hanging fruit, for lack of a better way to put it, things like safe parking, prefabricated units potentially. They were talking about doing these possible solutions and looking at sites where they could do them, including some areas near freeways. That then raised concerns about all the health problems that are associated with living so close to freeways. And the judge in the case, Judge Carter, who you mentioned in the introduction, said, well, if that's the case, maybe nobody should be living so close to the freeways. And he ordered the city and county to move people away from those areas. That led to the negotiations that resulted in this agreement. So this, because of the agreement that his order no longer is in place, it could be reinstated if the city and county don't live up to what they've agreed to. But things are going to move forward. And meanwhile, this larger case is still going on, and they're going to be back in court this week.
Obviously, larger case. I mean, the broad issue is that homelessness keeps getting worse in LA, in the county and the city, with the numbers going up. And I know we had County Supervisor Mark Ridley Thomas saying, quote, this is a new milestone in our partnership to ensure that everyone in LA has a life of dignity and worth. Mayor Garcetti calling it a milestone. City Council President Martinez, Nuri Martinez, saying this agreement will lead to major action, not rhetoric. Year after year after year. I mean, we've been hearing these kinds of words over and over, yet the numbers keep going up.
Yeah. And I think if this particular lawsuit leads to more housing options, more shelters, more safe parking, you know, the parties will agree that that is a good outcome here and we'll be happy about that. But you're right. Let's not forget that homeless advocates, service providers, concerned citizens, all kinds of people have been asking for many of these things for years. And this came about because of a court order. And it is hard to understand why the city and county couldn't do some of this sooner on their own. For example, expanding safe parking. It seems like it should be a simple thing to do, but it's faced a lot of bureaucratic hurdles. So all of that is to say that I'm certainly of the mindset of let's wait and see how all of this unfolds when I hear public officials say things like milestone and declare victory.
A milestone, sure. I mean, we'll see how many more milestones we have going forward. KCRW's Anna Scott, of course, who covers homelessness and housing in LA. Anna, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, that agreement with Judge Carter has the city and county of LA now scrambling to get the folks living under those overpasses to shelter beds. Thousands of people. It won't be a small feat, obviously. And for the people who work closest with those experiencing homelessness, it is yet another test of resolve and wherewithal for an organization that is on the ground to help. You heard us mention LASA, the LA Homeless Services Authority. Well, over the last 6 months, Heidi Marston has served as acting executive director. But after a nationwide search, the board, just this month, gave the job to her permanently. And she joins us right now. Hey, Heidi.
Hi there.
Kind of like baptism by fire now, right? This is
that's right.
Goodness, thousands of people. So give us your reaction to this new agreement to Judge Carter's order. We're talking about 6,000 people over the next, what is it, year, 10 months? How's that going
to
work?
Yeah, 10 to 12 months. So on one hand, we're very pleased to see accelerated pace of shelter being identified and funded so that we can get people indoors. The balance that we have here is the recognition that we're still in the middle of a global pandemic. And part of our priority is ensuring that people who are the most vulnerable to contracting COVID are in fact put indoors safely. So the folks under bridges and underpasses are certainly a piece of that, but wanting to make sure that we're balancing our resources to also be responsive to these life-saving measures as we work through the COVID-19 crisis.
What do you think about this order just on its face?
I think the movement that it will propel is encouraging. I'm also really pleased to see the city and the county coming together on this in partnership. LASA, being a joint powers authority, sits squarely in the middle of those two. I also think there are factors that we need to keep at the forefront of our mind, not the least of which is the COVID pandemic, but also the implications around racial equity and disparities that exist. Location-based strategies like this can be effective at moving people indoors, but it can't be at the cost of everybody else who might be more vulnerable or sicker. So it will certainly be a challenge for us to think about how we meet both of those demands.
Do you think this could make people, you know, when we're talking about getting people off the street or out of these underpasses, do you think it will make people move closer to freeways just to get into the program? Do you think people will gravitate to those places?
We actually have data that supports that happens when we use strategies like this. People really want help. They want services, and we don't have enough to go around. So to the extent that we have a location where you know you'll be prioritized, you do tend to see people migrate there. And why wouldn't you? Because you want to be indoors. So that's certainly something that we're going to have to watch and make sure that we have enough resourcing to serve all of those who do go there.
We see the number of homeless people up once again this year, 66,000 throughout LA County. That count was done in January, though, before COVID-19. Are we seeing the numbers getting worse now?
I think there's a few things we need to think through. So on one hand, we've made a lot of progress since March. We have more than 6,000 people who are now in shelter who weren't before. So that's one piece of it. But the other piece is this impending economic impact of COVID-19 with things like the eviction moratoria lifting and not knowing what that's going to look like. We have close to 600,000 people across LA County who are now unemployed. So the factors that we know already drove people into homelessness have been accelerated and are compounding through this COVID-19 crisis and potentially could impact our numbers even more.
Well, obviously, I mean, the homelessness has been an issue for a long time. It didn't just start. Obviously, it's getting worse, but it didn't just start during this pandemic. We know it's been around for a long time. How come it's taken a pandemic to really focus on the welfare of people who are on the streets?
Homelessness was a crisis before COVID-19, but I think what COVID-19 did was bring that emergency response COVID-19 crisis lens to homelessness in the way that we've been calling for a long time. And what we've demonstrated is that with the resourcing at the levels that we need to see it and the support of the public and elected officials, we can make progress much faster than we even thought we could. And so what this is showing is that it's not just about resourcing the homeless system, which is what LASA oversees. It's about looking at all of our other big mainstream systems like criminal justice, like child welfare, all of these systems that are pushing people into the front door of the homeless system and those safety nets that are failing on the way to our front door. Homeless system should really be the last of all of the safety nets. And by the time you get to us, there's a lot of systemic failures that have come through for you to get you to where you are.
We've taxed ourselves a couple of times in the city of L.A. and in the county of L.A. I'm talking about measures H and Triple H. We're talking hundreds of millions of dollars in tax revenues going toward homeless services. And yet the numbers still keep going up. What's going on?
Without the investment and the commitment from the taxpayers of efforts like Measure H, we would be in much worse shape. The reality is what drove the numbers this year and the increases this year is what we call inflow, meaning 227 people each day in LA County fell into homelessness and 207 people were housed through our system. Over the course of last year, we housed over 22,000 people with support from our system. That is up from 9,000 people before Measure H. So we continue to see each year that because of investments like H, we are outperforming, we're serving more people, we're getting better outcomes, but we're just not able to keep pace with the rate at which people are coming to our front door.
But I mean, you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars, and yeah, it's a big pace. You know, where are all these units to put the folks who are living on the streets? Is it frustrating for you as somebody who deals with the folks on the street all the time?
So last year, when we talk about Triple H, there were just over 3,000 units that came online, and that was a great step forward. We see 10,000 more units coming online over the next couple of years, but it's more than just building new housing. It's about saturating the existing market that we have. I live downtown, and there are tons of empty apartments and apartment buildings or half-constructed apartment buildings across this entire area. There has to be some opportunities there for us to think differently about using this empty space for people who need housing that's affordable.
I suspect developers are going to think a little differently, though, when they're wanting to charge like, you know, $2,500, $3,500 a month for those empty units.
Absolutely. And it if we continue down that path, we're going to continue to see more and more people becoming outpaced by the cost of rent. What we know across the entire country is that communities see a spike in homelessness when the median income is about 20% higher than average rent. In LA, it's 42% higher, meaning you need to make $41 an hour just to afford a one-bedroom apartment working more than full-time. That's just not sustainable.
It's daunting. It actually is. And you mentioned social justice at the outset and the people who are protesting. I want to talk more about the fight inside your own agency over the role of police. There are calls for LASA to stop working with law enforcement agencies. Are you concerned about the role that police play in helping your agency do the outreach, do the cleanups? Or could there be a better way, a more efficient way than LAPD or the Sheriff's Department?
LASA has always stood for and advocated for the decriminalization of homelessness. So I want to be really clear that we do not support looking at homeless policies and procedures in a way that's going to cause further harm to the people that we're trying to serve.
We have made changes over time in how we do outreach. For example, when you look back even a year or two ago, our outreach efforts were really led not only with our outreach teams, but with LAPD. And oftentimes, as you can imagine, that inflicted trauma, it impacted our ability to connect with individuals to get them into services. So we have shifted the approach that essentially removes LAPD from this at all. It lets us lead with services and lead with relationship, whether it's for the purpose of cleaning up an encampment, whether it's for just connecting folks to services. We've seen time and time again that separating those functions is really important. That said, as long as we have people who are living outdoors, there will inevitably be interactions between law enforcement entities and those people. So to the extent that LASA can be at the table, informing the practices, informing the trainings, and ensuring that our principles and our values align with those entities, we have a responsibility to do that. But LASA does not have formal contracts or anything like that with law enforcement entities. But inherently, our jobs overlap sometimes.
Your jobs overlap, but you also have a powerful voice in this debate as well. You may not have a formal contract, right? But your people deal with the police all the time. And if it came down to it and you had to make a decision about, hey, whether it's good to have the police on the ground helping you or not, what do you say?
I don't want police to have to be the first responder to calls that are dealing with something like an individual who's experiencing homelessness and maybe having a mental health crisis. I think there does need to be a shift in how we respond to those things rather than taking a law enforcement approach. Let's ramp up our mental health resources. Let's ramp up our capacity for our outreach workers and our clinical teams to go and drive those interventions. And in fact, LASA published guidance on unsheltered homelessness and interacting with folks who are unsheltered for municipalities. And it says exactly that these functions need to be led with a services approach as opposed to an enforcement approach.
Before we let you go, I do want to ask, your biggest challenges going forward. I mean, you've just been, permanently appointed to this position by your board. What's the first thing that you want to get done?
My first priority is making sure that we're telling the story in the right way. Homelessness is a complex issue that is a result of, as I said earlier, many failed systems. And the homelessness system, even if it was resourced to the optimal level, cannot do this alone. We need the support of these other mainstream systems to look at how they are addressing these issues and who is falling into homelessness out of their systems. I think of criminal justice, again, I think of foster care, that we know are drivers. And it's not only how those folks are falling in and falling through the cracks, but it's about how policies that are racist policies, that are discriminatory policies, continue to drive people to the front door. So LASA is committed to the racial justice work. We've been on that path for a long time and are moving that forward. But we want to see that infiltrate all of the other systems that touch the people that we're serving, and those systems stand up and be accountable in a real way to their contribution to the challenge that we see on the streets today. We have to take this and tackle this problem as a community, as opposed to just putting it on the front door of the homeless system.
Heidi Marston, the executive director of the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority. Heidi, congratulations again. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis, and now to Governor Gavin Newsom's order that mandates you wear a mask outside of your home. The vast majority of people in medical science say doing that can slow the spread of COVID-19. But oh, there are plenty of people who either don't believe that or believe you cannot force people to wear something they don't want to wear. Welcome to a place where even the sheriff says he won't enforce the order. Welcome to Orange County. Gustavo Arellano writes for the LA Times, and he's here with KCRW's Orange County line. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
This is like as the county turns. OC Sheriff Don Barnes came out and said that the responsibility of wearing a mask falls on the individual and that, quote, it is not law enforcement's responsibility to enforce it. Those are his words. If you have a mandate and deputies don't enforce it, is it still a mandate?
If a tree falls in the coronavirus forest, will it make a sound? Look, I understand where Sheriff Barnes is coming from. He's busy, you know. He just had former deputies plead guilty in an evidence booking scandal. He had another investigator plead guilty to falsifying the records so one of his former roommates could try to apply into the academy. So Barnes is too busy with his own department to try to be mandating people to wear masks.
I know he said this a few days ago. What has the state had to say about it?
Nothing really. I mean, this is one of the criticisms by people who want this mandate to be effective is that Governor Newsom just said, hey, you all have to wear masks and didn't really put any teeth or threaten with any penalties on this. So you have a couple of sheriffs in California, including Don Barnes in Orange County, saying we're not going to do anything. And of course, all this happened because of the protests happening in Orange County that led to the resignation of the former county health officer, Nicole Quick, over this very issue of wearing masks. So until Newsom says, hey, I'm going to crack down on you, nothing's going to happen, and Barnes can just continue with his political posturing over this.
I know we had a back and forth about masks with the former OC health agency head, Dr. Nicole Quick. She resigned, by the way. Now there's a new interim health officer, Dr. Clayton Chow. What does he have to say about this?
He's saying people should wear masks, but I do think he's gun-shy in telling the people of the County of Orange, you have to wear masks and it's a mandate. I mean, at the very least, he'll probably say, well, the state says so, so we're just going to follow what the state says, because, like, I think 99% of the medical establishment, wearing masks is recommended. Again, no one pays attention to history, but you should pay attention to history. In 1918, during the Spanish flu, the cities that had these mask mandates, they fared way better than the cities who didn't. The most famous case, of course, being Los Angeles, where you had actually the county health officials at the time, they were levying $5 fines to anyone who wasn't wearing masks. Los Angeles did have a lot of deaths, but nowhere near the deaths as San Francisco, which had an anti-mask league, which now, what, over 100 years later, looks like one of the dumbest things ever pulled off by humanity.
And by the way, you know, they wore masks after the flu pandemic, but the masks came off at some point. This is not going to be forever, obviously. As we've been talking about for a few weeks, the deaths and hospitalizations because of the virus are higher in OC than surrounding areas, at least the rate of increase. Does Dr. Chow have a strategy to get those numbers back down, or at least to levels that we're not seeing now?
Well, the strategy is telling people to wear masks and to practice social distancing. Outside of that, no. And what's interesting with Orange County, the cases have been slowly increasing, as has the testing, to be fair, although cases have tripled since the beginning of May, while testing hasn't even doubled since that. So that really shows cause for concern. That coronavirus is not stopping in Orange County, and the rate of hospitalization has roughly stayed the same as well. The one interesting thing, the County of Orange, they have all these stats on their website, by the way, really good stats. The one stat they don't track, though, is case numbers of deaths. So that you have to just go by the raw number that the county gives you. They don't have any graph showing ups or downs.
I wonder what this means politically, Gustavo. I mean, a lot of folks were angry at Newsom, who's a Democrat, far away in Sacramento, right, putting these edicts down for people in Orange County. He stepped in and closed the beaches there a few weeks back. Now he's stepping in and telling the people there that they have to wear masks. The Democrats, as you know, turned a lot of congressional districts blue in 2018. Do you think this threatens any momentum the Democrats have had in recent years in Orange County?
It definitely will in two congressional races. In Huntington Beach, Harley Ruta's incumbent there beat the longtime incumbent, Dana Rohrabacher. Well, he's being challenged by Michelle Steele, who happens to be on the Board of Supervisors and also happens to be the biggest coronavirus skeptic on the Board of Supervisors, always asking questions, also claiming that hospitalization rates were going down. This is back at the beginning, at the end of April. Well, that position is very popular in Huntington Beach, so that might actually be giving her an advantage. On the other hand, in North Orange County, where Gil Cisneros is, you have his opponent, Young Kim. She just came out with a statement, which I thought was incredibly brave, criticizing President Donald Trump for characterizing the name of coronavirus in racist terms. She's saying, like, this has no place in our society. obviously she, you know, she sees that there's an advantage for her to be taking a stance against that in a more moderate district in Huntington Beach. Whether that's going to give her an advantage over Cisneros or whether that's going to incur the wrath of the president or other Republicans, that's going to remain to be seen. But it was very surprising for her to say that on Twitter this morning.
Gustavo Arellano, who writes for the LA Times, a regular here, of course, on Greater LA. Gustavo, thanks.
Gracias.
That's it for today. Tomorrow, federal loans for businesses struggling during the pandemic, known as PPP, which curiously and unfortunately have not been going to many businesses owned by people of color. We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Share your thoughts with us. Subscribe to the podcast too, kcrw.com/greaterLA. Thank you for tuning in today, for your ears and attention. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great Monday.